Well, I think to kind of bring you up to speed, when we're kind of looking at just this idea of being transgender, it's kind of rooted in this body, in this element that you kind of have like a soul and body distinction, okay? That the real you is not anchored in your body, but who you are with your soul, right? And when you look at the transgender community, remember how they kind of made a distinction between soul and body? They would say the body is what? What term would they use?
Sex.
They would use sex, right? So the sex is basically your anatomy that is discerned at birth, and your soul part would be what? Your gender, right? So your gender is who you express yourself to be. And so what they would say is that there are times when your birth sex does not match your current gender, and that leads to what you call gender dysphoria, okay? And so the argument is that you don't change your soul, because that's almost immutable, right? You change your body to match your soul. So that's why cross-dressing, to taking hormones, to surgery, is to conform the body to the soul, and naturally to encourage that, right, to live with yourself in that way. They would want the community to affirm that the soul is really who they really are. You know, the gender is who they really are. And what's really interesting is, how can you tell what your gender is? What's that?
You look at the sex.
Well, that's not what we would say, right? But in their mind,
what do you feel?
It's like, what do you feel, right? So this is a very private, internal decision, right? It's what you think yourself to be, how you view yourself. You can't have like a gender test in this metric, right? You can have a sex test, right? You can test hormones, look at genitalia and all that stuff, but when it comes to your gender is a unique expression to you, only you can know. So it's very, I'd say, postmodern in that sense. Okay, so that's kind of the construct that we're working with, and that's how people who are transgender kind of understand themselves. So any questions about that basic framework? So we've talked a little bit, I was kind of giving you kind of up to speed about why, you know, we talked a little bit about gender dysphoria, how you can tell if you're, what your gender is, and then why talk about it. And how there is a growing, especially among the young, a growing number of people who would identify themselves as transgender. And keep in mind, transgender, this is very different from intersex. There are cases where people are truly born with two sets of genitalia. Okay, that is a very different issue. Okay, because that's, we're dealing with the body and the biology of it, right? But for our purposes, somebody who's transgender, they're clearly one sex at birth, but they express themselves in a different gender right now, and so they try to cross over and match these by basically surgically enhancing or mutilating the body. So let's look at some of the cultural movements for it. I wanted to draw your attention to page 4, and this was a pretty significant Supreme Court decision that will have some implications in the future. So on June 15, 2022, the Supreme Court made a significant ruling on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The text of Title VII prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Okay, so when you look at all those categories, right, you can't discriminate, you can't fire somebody because of their race. You know, if they're black, that's not sufficient grounds. Or perhaps if they come from, or color of their skin. Religion, you can't fire somebody who is Jewish from your, car manufacturing company. You can't fire somebody on the basis of sex, and how would the original people understand that?
Biological.
biological. You can't fire a woman for being a woman or a man for being a man or on the basis of their national origin. Okay, so that was written in 1964. And I mean, it's pretty good law, right? Now, people have had a hard time with this because there's nothing about sexual orientation in there. Right? So you could fire somebody for being gay. You can fire people because you just don't like them, right? People who have a business, you have the right to fire whoever you want to fire. But this one limits it and says you can't, you know, these five reasons are insufficient to fire somebody. So there's always been kind of this desire to expand the Civil Rights Act. They want to do it with the Civil Rights Movement and everything. But with this decision, the Supreme Court came up with a pretty novel interpretation. Okay? So this is Neil Gorsuch, who's a, by and large, pretty conservative justice. But this is what he said. An employer who fired an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and indisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids. Those who adopted the Civil Rights Act might not have anticipated their work would lead to this particular result, but the limits of the drafter's imagination supply no reason to ignore the law's demands, only the written word of the law, and all persons are entitled to its benefit. So notice, what was the original understanding of sex in Title VII?
Male and female.
Male and female, right? And how does this ruling, you know, what's the understanding of sex in this one?
You can't fire them based on their sexual orientation or what they feel their gender is.
Yeah, so basically he says a transgender woman is recognized as a woman. Right? So woman is a woman, so you can't man, woman, woman, woman. So, and what's interesting is they kind of bundled in homosexuality as well. How could they make that leap?
Who you have sex with?
What was that?
Who you have sex with?
Who you have sex with, yeah.
I'm just saying, they're just trying to cover everything they can.
Yeah, because you look at, I mean, for somebody to be a homosexual, right? That would mean that a man is attracted to a man. Let's say you are in a homosexual marriage, right? And your husband decides he wants to be your wife. That would actually make you heterosexual at that point, right?
Did you
repeat
that?
Okay. So what they're doing here is like, you know, a male to female. It, you know, equals a female, okay? So a trans woman is also a woman, okay? So they would say that is the same thing in the eyes of the law. So let's say you have, you know, a female who is, you know, who's married to a female, right? Yeah, that would be a lesbian relationship.
Yeah.
But let's say this female decides that she wants to be a female to male, right? That all of a sudden turns a homosexual marriage into a heterosexual marriage.
Okay, got it.
You know, so by blurring the line, you really blur the lines on just homosexuality in general. So all of a sudden, and this is something that intelligent, forward-thinking, gay and lesbian activists are starting to realize that this is actually erasing homosexuality as even a category. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the homosexual supervisors at the post office called the transgenders freaks because they understand that and how it challenges their worldview.
Yeah. So that's the thing. By taking away this, by saying that a male can be a woman and needs to be recognized as a woman, it basically makes the homosexual categories like irrelevant. Yeah.
It's the same thing, but I think more intense with you know, allowing men and women sports. Like it's like we have all these feminists who are like, oh yeah, we need rights, women's rights, and then we have men replacing women in women's sports. So
yeah, we're gonna get to that in a little bit.
And,
so
but one thing about it.
Yeah.
Is that I don't know if you've heard of trans exclusionary radical feminists.
TERFs.
TERFs.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get more into that a little bit later on. So I'm just gonna try to explain. So this is like, legally, this is where it's going. Like a trans woman is regarded as a woman, and you can't discriminate from a trans woman like you could a normal woman, right? All the protections of the law giving to women are to be given to trans women, okay? And so homosexuality kind of sneaks into that category as well in Title VII.
Right, so this is so how does that ruling impact the transgender cause? What would you see?
It reaffirms their beliefs.
Yeah, it gives them legal protection, right? Mm-hmm. So there are lots of opportunities where legally under the law, trans women are women and trans men are men. Okay, yeah.
It's a practical implication at our child elementary school here in Emporia. There's a trans woman who works there. And the school can't do it, in a sense, even if they wanted to, legally they can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So you have a man dressing up like a woman,
mm-hmm.
who wears a stuffed bra and the whole bit. And the consequence is for the children,
yeah.
This is like somehow a normal behavior.
Yeah.
But legally the school can't actually have the man dress like a man,
yeah.
or they violate this ruling.
Yeah, like, you look at our church policy for children, okay? Men cannot change babies' diapers.
Ooh.
I know.
Good.
You know why? Right? Men can't change, yeah, which we're all okay with. It's like, yeah, I tried to make
what's
that against policy,
reason?
But it didn't work. But but all of a sudden, you know, and we understand that because most of, you know, in the high 90 percentile, right? It's the men who are the perpetrators and stuff like that. So to be above reproach, that's what we put. Now, if you start to say, well, I guess a trans woman is okay doing that, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You really make gender distinctions irrelevant, mm-hmm. right? And that's why you hear the term queering of society. That's kind of, that's one of the major issues that's starting to happen. So you look at one of the driving causes, right? So they're trying to push this cause and to move society to a point where they're going to be more open to this. And a lot of it is to cultivate public sympathy. And this is one of the famous examples, one of the early stories that kind of moved and propelled the transgender movement. So bottom page 4. Lila Alcorn was born Joshua Ryan Alcorn. Raised in a conservative Christian household in Ohio, he came out a transgender to his parents at the age of 14. Naturally, Alcorn's parents refused to accept his gender identity, and 2 years later, they denied his request to undergo transition treatment. Rather, they sent him to a counselor who would seek to convince him to accept the gender he was assigned at birth. In despair, Alcorn committed suicide by walking into oncoming traffic on Interstate 71. In a suicide note, Alcorn writes, I have decided I've had enough. I'm never going to transition successfully, even when I move out. I'm never going to be happy with the way I look or sound. I'm never going to have enough friends to satisfy me. I'm never going to have enough love to satisfy me. I'm never going to find a man who loves me. I'm never going to be happy. Either I live this way the rest of my life as a lonely man who wishes he were a woman, or I live my life as a lonelier woman who hates it herself. There's no winning. There's no way out. I'm sad enough already. I don't need my life to get any worse. People say it gets better, but that isn't true in my case. It gets worse. Each day I get worse. That's the gist of it. That's why I feel like killing myself. Sorry if that's not good enough reason for you. It's good enough for me. And so the transgender community saw Alcorn's death as a rallying cry and sought to pass Lila's Law, which would ban conversion therapy in the United States. So in their minds, I mean, what would have prevented Alcorn's suicide?
Being a woman.
Being a woman, yeah?
Acceptance.
Acceptance?
Yeah.
parents especially, their acceptance and then giving the treatment.
Yep.
The thing is that it said there, I would, like, or I live my life as a lonelier woman who hates herself. So mm-hmm. even if she would have, if he would have converted to a she or tried to, it's still, would have been unhappy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like this kid needs Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just totally like, mm-hmm. I mean, yes, when you're depressed, all you focus on is yourself.
Uh-huh.
But it's just like, it was all about, you know, his happiness, his self-worth.
Yeah, and there's even some ideas like I think kind of late into the suicide note is this idea that he started the transition too late.
Mm-hmm.
Right, did you guys kind of pick that up?
Yeah.
Why would that be an issue?
Because he already hit puberty. So there's this like argument that if you start transition earlier before that, then mm-hmm. they'll be happier or something like that.
Yeah. Why would in their minds would they say you'd be happy if you can do an earlier transition?
Because puberty is permanent.
Permanent, right? The voice will drop.
Mm-hmm.
The muscle mass. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like to truly pass, you need to take the hormone blockers or start doing the hormone therapy right away. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why child transgender treatment and hormones treatment and everything like that is advocated, because otherwise they'll always be known as a trans woman or a trans man.
Mm-hmm.
They can't convincingly pass as a woman or a man, and society will see them as freaks. Okay, does that make sense? I mean, why is this such a compelling story for so many people? I mean, how does this further the transgender cause?
He's almost a martyr.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
People will almost always rally around the victim.
Yeah.
You rally around the what?
The victim.
Mm-hmm. And it gives the impression that it's our fault as a society
mm-hmm.
that he killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
If we would be more accepting, if we would. So it's motivation by guilt, and it galvanizes a mass of people. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is a really compelling letter. In that, like, it's I think there's a part of us that have felt all. We felt this.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm never going to have enough friends to satisfy me. I'm never going to have enough love to satisfy me. Like,
mm-hmm.
this question, this a longing
mm-hmm.
to be loved and to be part of a meaningful community. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that, I mean, there's some kind of some raw transparency there. That is compelling. We're like,
mm-hmm.
whoa, yeah, like I felt that before.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and it is true. I mean, there is a high suicide rate among transgender individuals, right? Which I'll touch on here. Sadly, Alcorn is not alone. It's estimated that 40% of transgendered people have tried to commit suicide. But certain studies have shown that transgenders with strong support are 82% less likely to attempt suicide, although incidence of suicidal thoughts are still high, right? So notice transgender support. What would that look like?
After transition.
Was that
after transition?
After transition, but want community support, right? What else? And that would entail?
Acceptance from family and society.
Yeah, acceptance from family and society. You know, and what's really interesting is like, how do you know if society truly views you as a woman or a man?
They kind of praise you almost.
They praise you. Yeah, and this is something I read, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal or maybe the Atlantic. But one of the things, like, you know you have arrived in this transgender utopia when men are just as willing to date a trans woman
mm-hmm.
as a normal woman.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman is just as willing to date a trans man as a regular man. Right? Do you think that's ever going to happen?
Not as a norm.
Not as a norm. And usually what you find is transgender men and transgender women, actually, they tend to date each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a standard that it's doomed to failure. Right? It's doomed to failure. So the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has addressed the issue of suicide in LGBT populations and reached the same conclusions on actual causes of suicide in transgender community. They declare, quote, and this is from the Huffington Post, so from their perspective, suicidal behaviors in the LGBT population appear to be related to minority stress, which stems from the cultural and social prejudice attached to minority sexual orientation and gender identity. This stress includes individual experiences of prejudice or discrimination, such as family rejection, harassment, bullying, violence, and victimization. Increasingly recognized as an aspect of minority stress is institutional discrimination resulting from laws and public policies that create iniquities or omit LGBT people from benefits and protections afforded others. Individual institutional discrimination have been found to be associated with social isolation, low self-esteem, negative sexual gender identity, and depression, anxiety, and other mental disorders. These negative outcomes, rather than minority sexual orientation or gender identity per se, appear to be key risk factors for the LGBT suicidal ideation behavior. So, in the minds of the advocates, if we want to end the scourge of suicide, it's time we stop trying to fix transgender people, okay? We need to fix society. Some school districts teach pre-K students to question their identity. The children who are questioned are affirmed by their teachers, given new names, pronouns, and clothing. Parents are kept in the dark. And should their child's alternate life be discovered, they are forbidden from sending their child to a therapist who will help them be more comfortable with their child's birth sex. Activists pressure parents with, would you rather have a live daughter or a dead son? And should parents resist the transgender treatment of their child, they risk losing custody. And now the government requires doctors and hospitals to provide gender transition drugs and surgery. It's not just the family that needs to be fixed. Society is faced with a number of questions. So maybe not here, but in various school districts, right, kids are taught the transgender unicorn or the genderbread man or something like that, and given the possibility that maybe you are a girl, okay? Now, we take a poll, self-described tomboys, right? Right, now if you're in this situation and you're like, I like playing with trucks, I like playing with, you know what I'm saying? What would happen?
They would start questioning, are they a boy?
Yeah, yeah. And what's really interesting is this definition of what is a man, what is a woman is a very amorphous thing, right? I mean, a lot of people, I don't know what it is. It is what you make it to be, you know? And kids pretend to be a lot of things, right? They pretend to be a lot of things. And the idea of encouraging this kind of exploration and then having public schools endorse it, keep it hidden from the parents, helping them live a double life, which would just affirm that even more, and then shaming the parents. I mean, it's kind of a sleazy ordeal. But they feel very strongly about it because this is about saving lives, and we need to fix society to be more accommodating and become that nurturing community that will stop transgender people from killing themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost an evangelistic kind of our view that they have. They're trying to save these kids and save the world. Through that, unfortunately, it's of course from a wrong agenda. An experience subbing in the public school system here in Emporia.
Mm-hmm.
Emporia in middle America is not excluded from this at all, just like what Joshua said at his school there. There was someone dressed up as trans when I was subbing, and they were volunteering in the lunchroom and serving, but all the kids were pretty much accepting, and it just desensitized. They're used to this now.
Yeah.
They think this is normal, and those who don't will be considered bullies, and they will be the ones who are ostracized from the school.
Yeah, and I've had a family member who experimented with being trans, and then she grew out of it. So a lot of young girls, you know, when you go through puberty, no junior high girl feels really good about her body. Okay? Don't need to agree with me, but we all know it, right? So there can be a real temptation to to think that, or and a lot of people who are on the spectrum actually are being pulled into this as well. Yes, Will?
Just also another experience in one of the fifth grades over Logan. You know, the teacher had the rainbow flag on her desk, and one of the students was encouraged. I saw on the desk, the student said, you know, gay rights. Mm-hmm. And all the kids were affirming and, like, very carefully helping that person and building them up. And I saw other kids who were, you know, jealous. They weren't getting that affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a built-in
affirmation.
If you don't do that, you are the bully.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the reason this is so dangerous is because children are so easily, can be so easily manipulated,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, when they are questioned, I mean, there have been studies that have shown that kids will just eventually give the answer that they think that the person asking them
mm-hmm.
wants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, and in terms
of... Yeah, that's the answer that I want.
Yeah. But no, like, I remember someone was engaging in a debate, and they're like, if children grew up to be what they believed they were, we would have a bunch of princesses and pirates
mm-hmm.
in society.
Yeah.
But
And that's part of the reason why we are hold back on baptizing children.
Yeah.
Because we
yeah.
just understand that that's a big decision. Somebody's going to say something over here. Okay.
What do they call it? Minority stress
mm-hmm.
suicide number thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very consistent or really accurate, because when you do look at the demographics of the highest suicide rates, the highest one, I believe, is middle-aged rich white guys. And when they look through the minorities, the suicide rate actually goes down significantly when the minority is more of a minority.
Yeah. I mean, almost inscrutable, like, why more people commit suicide. And and I think it's a view of suicide as people are victims of suicide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's a good way of looking at suicide.
Yeah.
I think it almost turns people into martyrs.
Yeah.
And it celebrates an act of self-murder.
Yeah.
They were driven to it, right? I guess, what was that, 13 Reasons Why, some popular Netflix show?
Yeah.
Woman kills herself, and it's all about... I never saw the show, I just read about it. Blaming other people. It's your fault. 13 reasons why this is your fault. I did this to myself. And it's just like a... I would say it's cruel. You know, it's a cruel act. Yeah.
I have a question here about the fact that how do they know that if they change their gender or their sex, how do they know they're going to be happier as that other person
mm-hmm.
than they are now, because every gender or sex, whatever you want to call it, has their situations. And
well, there, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like, one of the first steps that if you're a woman transitioning to a man, okay, what's the first thing they do? They give you testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And testosterone, it gives you energy, makes you stronger. I mean, there's a lot of things to it. And so you're injecting yourself with testosterone, and this woman is like, I'm feeling really good right now, right? And that just gives you the hope that if we keep on doing this, you don't think it's the testosterone per se. You don't necessarily attribute it to, you know, the hormone in your body so much as I'm fulfilling what I was supposed to be. Does that make sense? So I think a lot of it, Judy, is there's like when you start a new treatment or new hope, you know, there's the way to get over sadness is hope. Like, this is going to change things and make it better. And then you get some drug in your system that makes you feel stronger, more aggressive, gives you more energy. And that, I think that just helps, you know, kind of pave the way for further treatments and moving in that direction. But then, I mean, we're going to get to, once you get into the surgical part, there are so many drawbacks to that surgery. Like, there's like this dark side of that that's kind of like disturbing. But once you start down that path, it's the culmination is to go all the way. And I don't think we know enough. Like, it'll take 20 or 30 years, I think, before we know like the full import of what those surgeries have done to people and their psyche, what the suicide rates will be. But again, this is all from a, like a social health perspective. We're ultimately governed by the Bible, but it's good to think about these things. Yeah.
One thing I heard, I don't remember where, but there's this thing I read about what kind of what you're saying about, you know, testosterone, what it does to women
mm-hmm.
whenever they first take it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were saying, like, in the long run, it'll like desensitize the mind, and
mm-hmm.
it'll make people like unempathetic and just be really like.
Yeah.
It basically like takes away your empathy.
Could be. Yeah, and masculinizes is what.
But it's not,
yeah.
It's beyond, you know, masculinity and
yeah.
things. It's more like, it just like totally desensitizes your empathy.
And again, I mean, long-term studies, I think, are going to bear this out. But I think that's, but you get the quick high, right? And that's
mm-hmm.
like, keep going, right? There's more of this where this came from. So we kind of look at how does this impact us. So do we allow transgendered people to use the locker room or bathroom of their choice, right? I mean, if we're going to fix society and have society be more empathetic and understanding, right, what should we do? So what do you women think about that?
Absolutely not. Sorry. No.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, why do we have separate locker rooms for women?
It's kind of a safety. It's a safety thing. Also because, like, I don't want to be exposed to, like, that.
You change the locker room, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that basically, why do we have men's and women's restrooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's primarily because of safety, right?
And experience. Like, I think an experience that has led to, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I haven't experienced it, but
mm-hmm.
I know throughout the years there have been experiences that have ended, like, that have led us to saying, okay, this isn't, like, women need a safe space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the stat is, I've used the stat, 90% of men are stronger than 90% of women.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. It's actually 89% of men are stronger than 89% of women, but still holds around there. But yeah, men can just overpower women.
Yeah.
And the strongest of men are way stronger than the strongest of women.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, feminists.
Huh? I know. You know what I'm saying? And really the beginning, so there's something to be said for women to go to a place where they can feel safe. And
especially
in a very vulnerable situation, right? So yeah, it's a very personal thing. And so, again, transgender people, again, who determines who's transgendered and who's not?
I guess in this instance,
it's subjective.
It really is subjective, right?
Mm-hmm.
So not that I'd ever do this, but all I'd have to say is I identify as a woman, right? And there goes that safe space, right? And that's why I like going to the high school or going to the new airport where you have like these,
mm-hmm.
where I'm washing my hands next to a bunch of women.
Yeah.
It was... I didn't like that.
What
you know,
was
I kind of felt like I was where I shouldn't be.
It was interesting, too, was that when in Kansas City, it seemed like everybody felt awkward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like this mass, oh, yay, this is so cool.
Isn't this so wonderful?
Yeah. It's like everybody's like, this is weird.
20 seconds, you know? Yeah. So yeah, but all that, like, that's structural re-engineering, right?
Yeah.
And so part of it is like, who are the victims in this, right? So you brought up trans exclusionary radical feminist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chief spokeswoman among them is J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
So if you know much about her story, she was in an abusive marriage and still managed to write Harry Potter as a billionaire. But she's on record that women are women and men are men, and for men to pretend to be women is to basically undo many of the rights that women have fought for over the years, right?
Yeah.
And it's a situation where a man pretending to be a woman can receive the benefits of women being a protected class without, you know, experiencing menstruation or other things that make women weaker, right?
Yeah.
So another one is, do we allow transgender teen to play girls volleyball?
Yeah, I've been hit in the face with a volleyball by a girl and it hurts. I would not want to get hit in the face with a volleyball by a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, an example with volleyball, when I was at Calvary, they brought a couple guys in to hit, to help the girls get better with hitting harder.
Uh-huh.
And we played for 10 minutes and they said, never mind, you can't do this. We're going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And we were, I mean, we were athletes, but we'd never played volleyball before. Just hit the ball.
Yeah.
But I think even look at like with the Olympics with the boxing that went on.
Yeah.
And those gals got bludgeoned.
Yeah, and that person I think was intersex.
Oh, okay.
I think that was intersex.
But it was the same implication.
But it's the same implication.
Yeah. My brother-in-law is a doctor, actually kind of an expert in this issue, and he was saying that basically the person, it's a question socially if you can identify as a male or female. It's more messy because in the past you couldn't know what they were.
Yeah.
But in that situation, the person was physically a male who didn't develop properly, but had all the testosterone. So when they hit, they hit like a man.
Mm-hmm.
So it was functionally the same thing, but it wasn't a transgender issue.
Yeah. Yeah. His body produced the testosterone. It wasn't injected.
Yeah.
Weren't there a couple of UFC fighters who were transgender?
Yeah.
I don't follow the UFC.
They almost killed a couple girls.
Like 2 minutes into the fight, he knees her in the face and cracks her skull.
Yeah.
She's a champion now instead of.
Yeah.
Like you look, that happens anywhere, that person's going to jail for assault.
Yeah, and you look at, why do we have women's sports? I mean, what's the reason for it?
Because you can't put men and women on the same field and have the women be protected. Kind of, again, it's a safety issue.
Uh-huh.
I remember, I mean, I was kind of a tomboy when I was younger. I remember playing with a whole bunch of slightly older than me boys, but still, you know, on the basketball court. And one of them, all he had to do was, like, he wasn't trying to plow into me, but he was being competitive, he plowed into me. I broke my collarbone.
Yeah.
It's an issue of safety for women.
And to give women a chance to excel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, how many college scholarships are allocated to women?
Yeah.
Well, it's equal. Equal. There's more women's sports because football takes up so many scholarships. The part of thing, it was title, might have been Title IX, that there has to be an equal number of women and men's sports scholarships, right?
Well,
which
crew at K-State.
Huh?
Well, they had women's crew and.
Yeah, because you have to kind of balance out.
Yes.
So women and men get the same opportunity for an athletic scholarship. So when you have men crossing over, right, like in high school, like if I were to identify as a woman, I couldn't make the varsity team, but maybe play Division II college as a woman, right? I would have had that opportunity. Yeah.
I've heard the argument too, being like, well, they take hormones and all that stuff, so that's got to, you know, dilute or whatever their physical strength as a man, and it really doesn't. Like your bone, like it goes back to biology. Like your bone density won't change from your hormones.
Lung capacity,
your
heart.
Those will not
being
change.
Being 6'4".
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like it won't. Like it doesn't change those things.
Yeah.
Those go into play when, especially in sports, and it just.
Yeah. So there's a sense where you have, this is kind of a rare thing, where you have this protected class of women, right? And we make these public accommodations for women, women's restrooms, women's locker rooms, women's sports, and then to say, well, actually, men can go in and then start being the best at everything. Kind of defeats the whole purpose of it, right? And that's why you have trans, exclusionary, radical feminists like Rowling or something. So question three is, how do we educate children about transgenderism? Should doctors prescribe puberty-blocking hormones to gender dysphoric youth, right? For biological boys experiencing gender dysphoria, this is a pressing issue since their voices will drop during puberty. Once it does, they lose the ability to sound like a woman. On the other hand, studies show that 80% of children who struggle with gender dysphoria switch back to the biological sex.
right? So that's one of the issues that we have to think about, especially when this is being introduced in school. Maybe not in elementary school, but did you guys, recent like college students, did you guys, were you guys educated about gender dysphoria when you were in high school?
No, they didn't teach us about it at all.
Okay. Not by the school.
You were just
not by the school.
Not by the school?
Yeah, not by the school.
Okay. Were you taught by something else?
No, I was I kind of learned about it like through social media.
Okay.
That's how I learned about the term.
Did they do anything for you in college?
No, I mean,
well, you're exposed to it in college. I'm around it every day.
Yeah.
And now there's like this whole third gender kind of thing, where it's like they're just like, well, I don't want to be a guy or a girl, so I'm just gonna be in the middle.
Yeah.
There's no.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit in sociology or psychology they might mention it, but like they don't go like in depth, I think.
Yeah, Elijah?
So for incoming freshmen, they have a class, I don't remember what it's called. I had to take it for my Jones Scholarship, but it's basically a DEI class.
Okay.
It's not required. It's not required unless you have certain scholarship requirements.
Yeah, I think Nathan and Julia had to take it for KU. I'm not sure what was in there, but so yeah. So there is some level of it. I'm not sure when it's going to start in Kansas. I know that in LA it's a little bit different. Yeah, Scott.
Yeah, it was interesting. Addie was home maybe last week and came to class, and we followed up later the week, and she said, "Oh, it's interesting because she's taking sociology." She goes, "Basically, we watched the video. It's exactly the opposite of everything we talked about." How everyone's really both genders and their spectrum, and it's all the stuff that was shared. And so we just talked about how, but just reflecting at being in public school, teaching for a long time, most of the time things will start in the university, then those ideas and will spread to teachers,
mm-hmm.
and those teachers will then come in. So I've seen younger teachers that come in the last 5 years just with radically different ideologies,
mm-hmm.
and so then those teachers are more supportive of those things in their classroom. So it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely, there's a progression between starting in academia and certain universities, and then if you're, so for you guys as college students, kids that aren't grounded, and I remember I had university students that they both can view, like parents can view the university professors and the professors can view the parents as indoctrinating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to win the indoctrination battle? And some that said, my job is to challenge everything that your parents have taught you type of thing when I was a student, and
mm-hmm.
re-educate you to what's really true type of thing.
Hmm.
And so it was a big battle in your college years, but also a huge opportunity. We talked to Addie about how there's an opportunity to
mm-hmm.
participate in discussions in class or with classmates. She said she had a follow-up conversation with another.
Mm-hmm.
So those ideas, again, they kind of spread over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of the reason why we're doing this class, right?
Yeah.
Is to help bring things, and we've just been exposing things now, I think. When we get into the biblical argument, you're going to see that God created male and female, and that actually matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it matters. Judy?
I just want to say again, I praise God that I was born in the 40s.
I know.
The 50s and 60s were not near this complicated.
Yeah.
We knew who we were. We knew what our sex was. Our sex and gender were the same, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
No,
I will say this.
No changing of to who you were.
So for you young people out there, I was at a pastor meeting this past week. Saw your dad. And I was I realized that I was like the second oldest pastor in the room. With the oldest kids, with the longest tenure. I'm like, I'm old. Right? How did this happen? I was turning 50 this month. But there were just a lot of really young, super solid pastors, and who really have their head on straight, are committed to the right thing. And so, as much as we might miss, like, the Reagan 80s and stuff like that, I think in many ways,
The church right now, you know, there's a remnant of church that's actually pretty solid, super committed to Scripture, and the craziness of this world is so obviously wrong, it's actually pretty easy to push back on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like clear and obvious, and that helps exposing people to the truth. And we're seeing a lot of young people, I think, kind of even more curious about Christianity because we are now countercultural.
And Dave, I think there's, because we're all made in the image of God, I think there's a, even people within that movement,
yeah,
there's a part of them where something doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Like, what I'm trying, I'm trying to match my identity with my feelings,
yeah,
and it's not producing the results that I thought it would.
Yeah.
Like, there's this, and I think if we, seize the opportunity, seize the moment to press in on that,
mm-hmm,
graciously, truthfully, humbly,
yeah,
there's an incredible opportunity. And there's a lot of people who will be much more open than we often think.
Yeah.
If we were to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really think that there's some, we're going to see some awesome evangelism in the next 5 to 10 years. So before we despair, you know what I'm saying? It's like things are just becoming way more obvious now than they were before. Okay. And then the kind of the final issue is, should we mandate that insurance companies pay for transgender surgery, which increases everybody's premiums. It's about $1 million to do all that, by the way. Further, is removal of perfectly functioning organs medically ethical? Okay. So why is it important for that Christians have an informed conviction regarding the issue of transgenderism? Yeah.
Well, I was at the airport, and we got off the airplane, and I got off with another black guy, did not know his name. And we went into the bathroom, and it was filled with women. And he looked at me, and he said, "Are you comfortable with this?" And I said, "Nah, not really." And the pushback is going to be when guys say, "I'm not comfortable with this. I'm going to go outside and look for the men's bathroom."
Yeah.
That's really the way we're going to fight this thing. I don't think you can fight it in school. I don't think you can fight it with,
mm-hmm,
you know, speaking on it. You can, but
yeah,
it's really going to be, you know, when guys say, "I'm not comfortable with the women in my bathroom."
Yeah.
And you go outside and find out it's transgender or it's open bathroom.
Yeah, I think my personal prediction is, I like to say, like, there's a revival and that changes everything.
Yeah.
I think what you're going to have in 10 years is you're going to have major lawsuits from people who were promised certain things and then transitioned.
Yeah.
And it didn't deliver on the promise they could, and they're going to sue these hospitals.
Yeah.
That, and sue the people that pushed them into it. And I think that will probably be the turning point until then. So I think there's going to be a backlash against that. Because if there's money to be made with a lawsuit, people will do that,
yeah,
right? And if there's money to lose by doing these surgeries and being reckless about it, then hospitals will all of a sudden re-educate. So I think a backlash is coming, but between now and then, you're going to have a lot of people who are victimized and they're being sold something that's not true. Yeah, Lauren?
Yeah, so your question here, I think we have to have the informed conviction because, as somebody said it back earlier, you know, the reason they're starting so young is because it's almost like this, like they're trying to, it's like they have an evangelism thing to go through. Like, the people who feel this way have a deep, can't call it theology, but whatever you want to call it, about it, and it's very deep, and it's like,
mm-hmm,
they could argue you to the ground as being that their position is the right position, the one that's best for society and best for these children, and so that's why we have to be informed and have an informed conviction,
yeah,
because we have to be able to graciously,
mm-hmm,
and lovingly push back against that,
yeah,
and show them the Savior that they need.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to have young people, might be your children, your nieces or nephews, or just people that you know, people in this community who are going to be wrestling with this, right? So I think we need to be able to have answers to try to engage them.
Yeah.
And there's a couple ways, like, this is not going to end well for you. Like, what's being promised is not going to deliver the goods that you think, right? Kind of a deconstruction of that. And then next week, Tanner's going to be teaching for me next week, is just, what does the Bible have to say about this? How does the Bible regard gender and sex? Is there a difference? Is there an inherent goodness in these things? And I think the Bible does speak pretty effectively against this. But I think the big thing is, like, if somebody is, like, really entertaining this and everything, I mean, there's opportunities to talk them through this. And I would just say, don't do anything permanent, right? You might regret it later. I mean, getting a tattoo is a big deal, right? How old do you have to be to get a tattoo? 18. Is that a pretty good law?
Your parents sign.
Yeah. It's like 16.
16 if your parents sign, right? I mean, if society says, wait a second about the tattoo, right? Then, yeah, there's other permanent procedures you might want to wait a second on, right? So, let's pray. Well, Father, I do thank you for just this class and just how they're thinking through these issues. And I just pray for, you know, just the transgender community and population in Emporia who believe that changing their gender and changing their bodies and changing society will give them the happiness that they'll never find. I pray that they'll see that as a deception. They might seek to find their identity in you and in the prospect of being a child of the King. Help us to respond appropriately in Christ's name. Amen. Mm-hmm.